how much are we our DNA, and how much does heredity have to do with just our genetics? Those are among the questions my next guest explores in his new book. Carl Zimmer writes the Matter column for the New York Times and is the author of She Has Her Mother's Laugh, The Powers, Perversions, and Potential of Heredity. He joins me, and Carl, let's start with your latest book. It sounds like you're saying that genetics is part of our story, but not our entire story. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, when we think about heredity and how one generation leaves something to the next, I mean, certainly DNA is a big part of that, but we're much, much more than our DNA. And that's a really important thing to remember these days because everybody seems to be getting their DNA tested with companies like 23andMe and Ancestry. And, you know, certainly if you look at the advertising, they're saying, like, we're going to show you the real you. It's part of you, but what you are and what heredity is a much bigger story.
It seems like you're kind of wading into the nature versus nurture argument here.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, there are some cases where nurture just doesn't matter. You know, what's your blood type? Well, that only matters what genes you inherited from your parents. That's it. It's all nature there. But how tall you end up or what your personality is like, those are things where genes definitely play a role, but it depends on what the environment is in which the genes are acting. And, you know, the environment can totally override genes.
What do you think about the fact that so many people are using DNA testing companies like Ancestry and 23andMe to find out more about themselves? Like, are we prepared to get that kind of information and really know how to use it and interpret it?
You know, I think it's a great opportunity, but it's also an opportunity to come away with a lot of mistaken impressions. And it really depends on how much you invest in terms of your own time and effort to understand what it is that you're looking at. The data doesn't speak for itself, you know? So if someone says to you, oh, we tested you for this genetic variant called APOE4, you can get this from 23andMe. So APOE4, if you have a couple copies of this variant, you can be 8 times more likely to get Alzheimer's when you're older.
Hmm.
But what does that mean? I mean, what is the average risk that people have? Do you know? I mean, you should think about that. Is how rare is Alzheimer's? And if you don't get that variant, it turns out, hey, guess what? You don't have this variant. Does that mean you will not get Alzheimer's? Nope, it doesn't, because there are actually other genes that could pose a risk as well.
So what's the right balance then? You know, if you want to find out, like, where is your family from? You know, what part of the world is it from? Versus, am I more likely to get Alzheimer's or some other kind of disease? Like, how should we, if we send our saliva or, our blood off to some company, like, what realistically should we be thinking we're getting back? And how should we be looking at what we get back?
Well, this is all science. And when scientists are working on a problem, there can be a range of kinds of certainty that they have, depending on the complexity of the problem and how much research they've done. So in the case of what the results you get back, I would say, for example, one thing you can do if you want to is to see how similar your DNA is to individuals in their database. And they will call this a relative finder, because they can tell you, you know what, there's someone here who looks to be really, really closely related, like, you know, a sibling, that kind of closeness. Or maybe this person looks like they're a first cousin. That's actually quite solid. And there's actually a risk to that, which is, what if you find out someone's a relative and that totally blows up the stories that your family have told about yourself?
It really causes family problems.
I've heard a number of cases where people suddenly discover they have a half sibling that nobody told them about. You have to be ready for that. There's a rare chance of that, just like there's a rare chance of finding out you have some sort of cancer mutation. But where things get fuzzier is like with Ancestry. Like, am I 23% Polish or am I 8% Senegalese? You know, these numbers that they put on these reports may give you the impression of a total certainty, but it's not. In fact, these are statistical estimates.
You are somebody who writes about science and sometimes kind of complex scientific concepts for, you know, a wide non-scientific audience. Do you think that in general people understand science to the extent that they should?
Well, I feel like I don't understand science to the extent that I should. I mean, in the sense that, like, I'm always
What hope is there for the rest of us?
Well, it's I'm a big fan of lifelong learning, and I feel very lucky that in my job that I get paid for that. Science is always moving forward. So, you can't just sort of say like, well, what I learned in high school 30 years ago will serve me in good stead. It won't. I mean, we have new kinds of technology now that can actually alter the future of heredity. We have CRISPR, for example, which was a way of editing DNA. That did not exist a couple years ago. And so, you know, there was a point not too long ago where I had to sit down and say, okay, this CRISPR stuff, these scientists keep talking about it. I have to figure out what it is that they're talking about. And we all do, because we have to make decisions as a society about what the value is. I mean, this could potentially cure a bunch of what are now incurable diseases. On the other hand, you know, we've seen that scientists have already used CRISPR in China to genetically edit babies. So I think we all need to be ready to be engaged with the science as the science changes.
What to you is the next big scientific thing that we're all going to be talking about?
I've been kind of fascinated by how artificial intelligence is making a move into medicine. I wonder how comfortable we will be with, you know, a computer being our doctor, or our doctor just kind of looking at the screen and saying, well, my computer says that this is the drug we should use on you, or this is the disease that you have, or so on. That, I think, will be the next big unsettling thing, because we have such a old tradition of relying on these human beings as our doctors for our very survival. Are we going to be ready to put our lives in the hands of computers?
All right. Carl Zimmer, thanks a lot for coming in.
Thanks for having me.